Epilogue. "He weren't no obold, to be sure," Bruner said against the stream of huzzas and hey-hos that came his way. He sat with his peers around a small fire in front of the gates of Dark Arrow Keep. With Hartusk fallen, the battle had quickly disintegrated into a hodgepodge of small pockets of fighting, and usually with those warriors of many arrows more interested in running away than in fighting. Many orcs and other monsters did get off that field, indeed tens of thousands running north into the mountains.
"Might that they'll be coming back," King Emrys warned.
"Aye, but we should chase him and kill him to death," King Harnoth agreed.
"Tear Dark Arrow Keep down log by log," Bruner declared, "and float them logs down the Cerberin. Me boys'll take them for burning in Mithril Hall." "Yeah, boys," King Emrys said slyly,
and he glanced at King Conorad, who looked up at that surprising remark. Bruner looked from king to king, then laughed heartily.
"Nah," he said, "Conorad's boys. Me place is done here, me friends. I got a road I'm needin' to walk."
"Back to Icewind Dale?" King Conorad asked, but Bruner shook his head.
"I'll tell ye soon enough."
He motioned to the side then, noting the approach of Drizzt and the other companions of the hall. He knew where they had been, with whom they had met.
"What are ye knowing, elf?"
Bruner asked as Drizzt arrived.
"The orcs will not return," Drizzt replied. "Not soon, at least, and under no king or warlord. Lorgru, the son of Obuld, has many of them now under his command, and that one had no designs of conquest." He looked over at Sinifane as he finished, and the elf nodded knowingly. Lorgru's mercy toward her had started this war, after all.
"He ain't coming back, no matter his designs," King Harnoth said,
and all the others, Bruner included, nodded at that demand. Drizzt bowed to diffuse the sudden tension.
"Hartusk usurped the throne from Lorgru, who wanted no war," Drizzt explained.
"And how might ye be knowing all this, Mr. Drizzt O'Urden?"
Ragged Dane asked.
"From a friend."
"A friend?" King Harnoth asked suspiciously.
"A friend who brought dragons," Drizzt replied without hesitation.
And that set the young King of Adbar back on his haunches. The drow started to elaborate, but he stopped suddenly, a curious look coming over him. He looked to Catti Bree first, and his expression gave her pause.
"What is it?" she asked with great concern. "Drizzt?" Regis added.
But the drow couldn't hear them at the moment. A song was in his head, a spell actually calling to him. He walked away from the small fire, moving among many campfires, to the curious looks from dwarves and elves and humans. The companions of the hall and many others gave chase, calling to him. Finally he stopped in the midst of a wide area cleared of bodies and camps. Catti Bree rushed to him, but he lifted his arms to her and motioned her back. The song was loud now in his mind, deafeningly so, urgently so, begging release. And so Drizzt O'Urden began to sing. His arms lifted up to the side and hung outstretched. His head went back, his words aimed at the sky above. To the gasps of the onlookers, Drizzt floated up from the ground. A glow came about him, like fairy fire at first, but then intensifying.
"Drizzt!"
his friend shouted, except for Catti Bree, who was crying and laughing all at once, overwhelmed as she believed she had solved the mystery. She had thought herself the chosen of Mialiki. But how silly that seemed now, considering the drow floating in the air in front of her. Beams of light shot from Drizzt's hands, reaching up to the darkening. Subtle and soft at first, they gathered in strength and multitude, and now the flashes came so quickly they couldn't be counted. Into the sky they soared, striking the roiling blackness, and there fires erupted and lightning flashes shot the night as the great battle roared.
"Mialiki,"
Catti Bree said, tears streaking her cheeks, and the sheer glory and weight of the experience drove her to her knees. Though he was on a hillock far away, Tiago Bayenry couldn't miss the spectacle of Drizzt throwing shards of brilliant light up into the sky. The young noble drow ducked behind a bush, its leaves meager to non-existent, as with all of the flora in the Silver Marshes this year. He watched with amazement and anger. He grasped the scraggly branches, mesmerized by the mounting display.
"We will have him soon enough,"
promised a voice behind him, a voice so unexpected that Tiago nearly leaped out of his boots and spun around with his sword drawn and shield spiraling out to a larger size.
"What are you doing here?"
he asked when he recognized the speaker.
"I came to find you,"
Dumwheel lied. She had come here to find another, of course, but Casidea had sensed a Bayenri House emblem, the residue of Tiago's long float back to Faerun, for that emblem, like all of House Bayenri's marks, had been fashioned of a stone from the Faersres, the same Underdark region with its magical emanations that had granted Casidea its sentience.
"I did not summon you," Tiago barked at her. "Where is Ravel and my wife?"
"I know not,"
Dumwheel answered. "They were chased from the Rauven Ford back to the south. I was cast into the river and washed all the way to the Serbrin. My sword led me to my father, and from there, on the slope of the mountain above the dwarves' home, we came north in search of you."
Tiago looked at her with clear doubt.
How could she have known that he would be up here, or even alive? He lowered his sword, and Dumwheel moved closer.
"You should be glad that I have come, for I can prove to be of great value to you up here on the world above,"
she said, and there was a bit of a tease in her soft voice.
"You are worthless and worthless to me."
"You should rethink that,"
Dumwheel said. "You dare question me?"
"I am not worthless to you, noble son of House Bayenri," she said, standing tall. "I can move among the folk of the surface easily, and besides," she moved a bit closer, "I can offer you something the women of Menzo Baranzon cannot."
"Do tell," Tiago said when she was standing right in front of him.
"Respect,"
Dumwheel said. Tiago feigned anger at that and managed a scowl, but Dumwheel could see that she had gotten through to him a bit at least, though whether because of the practical benefit she offered or the emotional one, she could not tell. It didn't matter, she decided, because she hated him in any case, and needed him to help with her quest, even as he thought she was aiding him in his own. Even the dwarves were crying soon, all the onlookers on the field overwhelmed by the spectacle, and the stars peeked through, shining on the Silver Marches for the first time in so many months. And still it went on, the shards of brilliance leaping from Drizzt to join in the fight. And still he sang, though he felt as if his very life force was engaged in this perilous struggle now, the lightning against the darkening. It went on through most of that midsummer night, which for the first time in so long became true night once more, with stars and a full silvery saloon and her tears bathing the land. It ended with a whisper, a final gasping note, and then the spell was broken and Drizzt fell back to the ground and crumpled into a heap. His friends ran to him, thinking him dead and crying to Mieliki. In the foothills to the west, the normally unflappable Jarlaxle had to slap his hand over his mouth to stop from crying out with laughter.
"Brilliant," he said. "They think it their goddess."
As the darkening above fully dissipated, Kimmoriel broke the mental connection he had enacted between Brizzt and Gromf Bayenri, wherein the Archmage had used the unsuspecting Drizzt as a surrogate for his powerful enchantment, a spell to defeat Sabrax.
"I know not what to say,"
Jarlaxle remarked, shaking his head. It took Gromf a long time to steady himself after the exertion of that spell, as great a casting as he had ever performed. He opened his eyes and stepped back from the psionicist, closed his huge spellbook, and let his imposing stare fall over Jarlaxle.
"A feint within a feint within a feint, if ever I've seen one," said Jarlaxle, who couldn't remain speechless for long after all. "All witnessed Drizzt casting the enchantment, and all believed it the power of his goddess flowing through him.
The task is far removed from the caster. Brilliant. Why, brother, you are beginning to remind me of me.
Grumpf arched an eyebrow and didn't have to utter the threat it signified. But surely you understand my confusion, Archmage, Jarlaxle said with proper deference. Matron Mother,
damn Quenthel to the nine hells where devils can play with her.
Grumpf growled back, and both Jarlaxle and Camuriel fell back a step.
The true Matron Mother of Menzo Berenzon sleeps in the arms of Manolan Fay Beenri this day, awaiting my return, Grumpf explained. Quenthel, all of the city will learn that truth soon enough.
Jarlaxle and Camuriel looked to each other with surprise. The massive pickets of Dark Arrow Keep came tumbling down under the brilliant sunshine of the following day, the dwarves happily carrying them to the Cerberin and tossing them in. Riders had already left for Mithril Hall, and the dwarves at the Cerberin Bridge would be ready to receive the firewood. The meeting inside the audience chamber of Dark Arrow Keep that day was limited to the four dwarf kings, for this was Delzoon business most serious.
"Mithril Hall's for Conorad,"
Brunner asserted as soon as the formalities, including several hearty ales from Brunner's magical shield, were out of the way.
"Even if meself was to stay, it had not been me place to challenge that what was rightfully and properly given. Always be a place for little Arar in Citadel Felbar," King Emerus assured the red-bearded dwarf to a chorus of huzzas and clanging mugs.
"Bah, but his place is Mithril Hall, and don't ye doubt it," King Conorad demanded.
"Me place is in the west,"
Bruna corrected solemnly. And the flagons drifted lower, and the three kings stared at him somberly.
"And I'm hoping that yourselves, me friends, will afford me the boys I'm needin' to get to that place."
"Gontalgrim,"
Conorad said quietly.
"Aye," Brunner replied. "Damned drow elves got it, but they ain't for holding it."
"We should be sending word to Mirabar," King Harnoth offered. "Aye, and Icewind Dale, course."
"How many boys?" King Emerus asked.
"All ye can spare,"
Brunner replied.
"It's Gontalgrim, and the throne's there, and the forge. Ah, but she's the stuff of legend." "There were rumors that ye found it,"
said Emerus.
"More in rumors, found it twice. Ye see me shield and axe? Been through the forge of Gontalgrim, and that forge is burning with the power of a great beast of fire. It's all that ye heard, boys, and more, I tell ye."
He lifted his flagon, and the others brought theirs up beside it. And the four dwarf kings looked into each other's eyes and hearts, and knew then that Gontalgrim would be returned to the line of Delzoon.
This has been an Audible Studios production of Vengeance of the Iron Dwarf, Legend of Drizzt, Companions Codex, Book 3. Written by R.A. Salvatore. Performed by Victor Bavine. Producer, Mike Charzuk. Copyright 2015 by Wizards of the Coast, LLC. Production copyright 2015 by Audible, Inc. Audible Studios is a division of Audible, Inc.